Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Giustina. Joining us today is State Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from New York's 42nd Senate District, which includes Middletown, Woodbury, and Monroe. Senator Skoufis is the chair of the Senate Committee on Investigations and Government Operations. He joins us from time to time. And I thank you for coming back to talk with us on the Capital Connection this week, Senator Skoufis.
Always great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to start with a bill that you have called the Retail-to-Retail Bill, which is, well, it impacts restaurants and bars across New York State. Tell us about it and what it's designed to do.
Absolutely. So anyone who's in this line of work, restaurants, bars, taverns, also liquor stores, knows that the distributors, and there are two big ones in New York State that control probably 90% of the market for, in particular, wine and spirits, they have a stranglehold on the alcohol system. If you're a liquor store, you're a restaurant, you're a bar, the only place by law until now that you can purchase any and all alcohol from is from a distributor, or also known as a wholesaler. And what this bill allows for is those restaurants and those bars and taverns, when they're in a pinch, say, for example, you're an Irish bar and it's St. Patrick's Day and you've got parties all throughout your establishment and you run out of Jameson on St. Patrick's Day at your Irish bar, you can't wait for 3 days from now, 4 days from now, when the next truck from your distributor comes by to restock your Jameson and other bottles. And so what this bill allows for is, in limited quantities, allows for these establishments to go down the street and, when they're in a pinch, buy a handful of bottles from the local liquor store. And so it makes sense. It's a win for all of these establishments. Takes a little tiny, tiny piece of business away from these behemoths, which they strongly opposed this bill, one of them in particular. The other was actually neutral on the bill, and is just a pro-small business measure that, in many cases, I'm told from the Restaurant Association, this could save their members, these establishments, upwards of $5,000 a year. Just by virtue of not having to pay these emergency fees that restaurants and bars have to pay to get especially smaller quantities of alcohol shipped to them from these distributors.
From there, let's talk about a proposal in Orange County for an Amazon warehouse. This is Weiwei Yanda. And the Orange County Industrial Development Agency, which, you know, you've been critical of the Industrial Development Agency, a state-appointed monitor, now vetoed the $80 million property tax break for that warehouse. There's been local opposition as well. Give us your thoughts on this.
So you hit the nail on the head. The most important piece here is the state-appointed monitor. We're the only IDA in the entire state. And every county in the state, and then many municipalities in the state, have IDAs. And the Orange County IDA is the only one with a state-appointed monitor, which I got into the budget several state budgets ago, because the Orange County IDA has run amok and lost sight of who they serve, which are the taxpayers. Not the big corporations that walk through their doors asking for tax breaks. They're supposed to serve the taxpayers of Orange County, and so that's why the monitor is there. And this is a controversial project right outside the city of Middletown, and as you said, the town of Weiwei Yanda here in Orange County. It would be the largest warehouse in all of New York State at 3.2 million square feet. But the kicker here is they went to the IDA. Amazon, mind you, not, you know, some company no one's ever heard of that just scrapes by. Amazon went to the IDA and asked for $80 million in property tax breaks to our taxpayers. They look to our taxpayers and are asking them to subsidize their property tax bill. And so I've been vehemently opposed to that proposed tax break. The IDA approved it in a rare not on unanimous vote. It's very rare that their votes are not unanimous. And nevertheless, they did approve it after a lot of contemplation and due diligence, and certainly attempts at due diligence, because Amazon was stonewalling them and the IDA was stonewalling the monitor. The monitor did decide to veto the decision that the IDA made to approve these tax breaks. And so now we're waiting to see what the response is from the IDA and Amazon. Are they going to come back to the table and renegotiate as they should? Are they going to drop their IDA application, their pilot application specifically, and pay their damn taxes? What are they going to do? There's some talk about them ignoring the monitor or going to court and challenging the monitor, which would be preposterous. And so right now we're in a wait-and-see mode as far as what the folks on the other side of this deal, the IDA and Amazon, are going to do next.
It's a bit interesting to me, Senator Skoufis, that when you hear about these proposals, whether it's a public-private partnership or these IDA proposals, politicians generally jump on board whenever there's, well, we're going to create jobs. But you don't necessarily jump right in.
I don't. And now, look, mind you, I'm not anti-incentive. If there's a good project that's going to create good jobs that pay well, this Amazon project, by the way, 90% of the permanent post-construction jobs to be created would have an average salary of $37,000 a year. These are not good paying jobs. But if you've got a good project, good jobs that the community supports that otherwise definitely won't come here unless they get a little bit of help, that's what incentives are for. And I am for those types of incentives. But what we have seen time and time and time again are these applicants, these big corporations, just apply for tax breaks and apply for subsidies because they can, not because they need them. And economic development officials jumping whenever they're told to jump. And the loser, whenever that happens, is the taxpayer. And I can tell you one of the issue areas that I do work in here in Orange County, this being one of them, of all the issue areas I do work in, the public overwhelmingly backs me up on this issue and this approach time and time and time again. They're sick and tired of their hard-earned dollars and paychecks being in part funding these projects that don't need their help. And most importantly, taxpayers are not foolish. They know that their property taxes are so high in part because you have some of these projects not paying their fair share in property taxes. And someone's got to pay that fair share. And if it's not going to be these big projects, then the burden gets shifted over to the average resident. And so, you know, you're absolutely right. I think I'm more the exception than the rule. I take a scrutinizing lens to these incentives and see, is it really necessary? Are taxpayers getting the return on investment that they deserve? And whether it's IDA work, whether it's the film tax credit, where literally we spend $1 billion a year for one industry to come to New York, and the return on investment, and these are not my numbers, these are independent studies, 13 cents comes back to taxpayers for every dollar that they put in to the film tax credit in our New York State budget. We have to do better. We have to be more responsible to the taxpayers that we represent.
He is State Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from New York's 42nd Senate District. You are listening to The Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina. Well, I want you to tell us more about this South Blooming Grove election controversy. You stepped in. You want the state attorney general, Letitia James, to investigate. What's happening?
This is a wild situation, David. We have a small village in the 42nd Senate District here in Orange County by the name of South Blooming Grove. About 4,000 individuals live in this village. And what we saw was, after the fact, there was a village election that was held on October 22nd of this year that seemingly nobody knew about. It was a secret election, effectively. And what we saw was, I think the evidence is crystal clear, we saw a highly intentional, systematic attempt to hide this election from local voters. This was an election for mayor. There was an incumbent mayor, and it was an election for two of the four trustees, so a majority of the board, three out of the five positions. And the reason why the folks who run this village attempted to and did hide this election from voters is because the last time there was an election, a write-in candidacy almost defeated their preferred candidates. And so if no one knew about the election this time around, no one could run candidates, no one could even run a write-in candidacy. And so the three incumbents skated along. They called up on election day about, 50, 60, 70 of their supporters and close friends, made sure they got out to vote. And meanwhile, the rest of the community had no idea this election was going on. Let me give you one or two examples that illustrate just how systematic this was. So state law requires before every local election that the local municipality post a notice in their official designated newspaper of record. And at the special meeting that was called to begin the change of election date that's required, there's a whole process, they called a special election. They gave 1 hour's notice by putting up a flyer in their village hall window 1 hour before their special meeting. Hey, we're calling this special meeting 1 hour from now. Of course, no one was in the audience because no one saw that flyer an hour before the meeting. And at that meeting, they redesignated their official newspaper from the newspaper that is the daily newspaper here in Orange County, the Times Herald Record, to a weekly newspaper three towns over that has zero readership in South Blooming Grove. Those are the lengths by which this municipality went to hide this election from voters. There were no emails, no social media, nothing on their website, no robocalls, no mailers, no nothing. And what we saw was an election with 6% voter turnout where they selectively reached out to their supporters to come out and vote. And then lastly, we've gotten lots of tips since we've leaned into this and investigated the situation. And we've gotten allegations from people in their village that the incumbents and their supporters were calling folks, requesting that they ask for absentee ballots and then requested that they hand in those absentee ballots unfilled so that they, the folks making these calls, could fill in those absentee ballots for them. That is highly improper, as you can imagine. That's putting it kindly. And so I've reached out to the AG and have requested that she invalidate the election outcome here. She has a tool at her disposal. It's called a quo warranto proceeding. It hasn't been used in a number of decades, I believe, but it is there. And if there was ever a situation that called for her to step in and invalidate these results, it's this one.
Have you heard anything from her office yet?
Only that they are investigating and they are digging into this, so they are taking it seriously. They are really looking into this, examining the circumstances. I've handed over all the documents and all the information and facts and evidence that I have, and now we're waiting for them to do their due diligence.
Well, from here, since we just talked about an election controversy, let's talk about a bill that has to do with elections that you've introduced. This is about Super Tuesday, your new bill, which you say has broad support among colleagues, would shift New York's presidential primary date to Super Tuesday, an effort to give New York a louder voice in presidential nomination. What are the chances?
I think the chances are pretty good. Look, it's a no-brainer. Once colleagues and once I had all the facts, all the evidence, it's pretty obviously clear that this would be good for New York, but it's even beyond New York, it'd be good for the country, and here's why. We are obviously a large, highly populated, over 19 million people live in this state, and we have a long history of political engagement, high political engagement, and yet nevertheless, for most of recent history, we've been towards the back of the presidential primary calendar. By the time the primaries usually get to us, at least mathematically, if not completely, the race is over. even in 2016, where you still had Bernie and Hillary campaigning, Hillary had mathematically wrapped up the nomination by then. You've got to go way back to a point where we were actually relevant and influencing the outcome of a presidential nomination. And so, look, the stated reason why we are in the back of the pack is because we get quote-unquote bonus delegates from the national parties by willingly sort of ceding relevance. We get to hand out a few more convention passes to a few more big donors. The vast majority of my colleagues and Democrats and Republicans alike in New York would happily trade that off for relevance and impact in the primaries. I want presidential candidates to actually have to come to New York and ask for our votes. I don't want them to only be coming to New York to visit our corporate boardrooms and our penthouses in Manhattan to host fundraisers and then jetting out the next day. So this is an attempt to put us in a highly relevant timeline and situation. And yes, there is very significant support so far amongst colleagues. And I'm hoping that we can get this done this session. The reason for the timing here, the last piece, because your listeners might be thinking, why in the world are we dealing with this heading into 2026? 2028 is a million years away. The reason for it is the national parties now, I'd say now through summertime in 2026, they are putting together the framework and the rules by which these primaries and caucuses are going to be put together for 2028. And that includes the structure of the calendar. That's why we've got to do it now.
When you say you have support from your colleagues, Senator Skoufis, does that include your Republican colleagues?
We're just starting to reach out to them. Obviously, Democrats are in the majority right now, but the simple matter of fact is I imagine the Republicans in both houses will also be supportive of this, because why wouldn't they want for their Republican primary here in New York to be relevant and at the front of the calendar? This is not just a Democratic thing, though certainly, you know, as a Democrat, I'm focused on that primary. But from their perspective, I imagine they want to be impactful. And so I'm hopeful that they're going to support this, too.
Talking with Senator James Skoufis on this week's Capital Connection. He's a Democrat, but he's a guy that doesn't really care what party you're from if he thinks you're going in the wrong direction, including you being regularly critical of Governor Hochul, who's a Democrat. And that brings me to this, and this certainly jumped out at me, and I'm sure you've heard from many about it, which is an article that appeared in the New York Times in November on the 13th by Grace Ashford. The headline is, Hochul vetoed 7 of his bills in a single day. Could it be personal? And he is you, Senator Skoufis. They call you an ambitious legislator, never shy about criticizing the governor. After a protracted budget battle last year, Mr. Skoufis gave a speech on the Senate floor blasting her approach as authoritarian. He later asserted that Ms. Hochul had demonstrated an inability to be competent. Now, obviously, you're going to speak your mind, and I know that congestion pricing was something you hadn't supported that the governor did. But do you believe there's anything personal here because you've been critical of the governor that this Times headline is retribution to you personally?
Yeah, so look, let me say a few things. First is sometimes narratives can get blown out of proportion. And look, you're right. I've never hesitated to speak my mind, regardless of who it is I'm on the opposite side of on issues or what party they're from. But the facts are the facts here. The governor has signed 30 of my bills this year. She's vetoed 13. And so an almost 3-to-1 ratio there. And we've got some other bills that were just sent to the governor. And I'm hopeful and I anticipate there are going to be a bunch more signed from this batch that was just sent to her. Yes, you know, the budget this year in particular was a very heated budget negotiation. It was a very protracted government budget negotiation. And the outcome was not one that obviously I was thrilled with. And so, you know, in the heat of a moment, there were some things that were said that I felt very strongly about and went out on the floor and said it, because that's my style. That is who I am. And I'm going to continue always speaking my mind. But I pride myself, and I know, I will say this, I know the governor prides herself on putting aside whatever differences and disagreements and at times frustration that we might have for one another or for anyone else. And we always try and never lose sight of what we're there for in Albany, representing people, which is doing the work of the folks that are here in New York State, the 19 plus million, and especially the 300,000 plus I represent in Orange County. And so yes, look, you know, we've been twisted a few times this year, the governor and I, but I think it's fair to say we are both looking forward. We are building and can always continue to build a working relationship with an eye towards trying to do what's right for the people that we both represent.
Well, you know, her lieutenant governor, Antonio Delgado, who was the congressman from the 19th district before becoming the lieutenant governor of New York, is running against her. I don't think you've announced any endorsement now. Are you holding that endorsement for governor, or are you supporting Hochul, or would you support Delgado?
I respect Antonio Delgado. I actually overlapped with him a little bit when he was in Congress and before redistricting when I went up into Ulster County. And so I've known him for a very, very long time and appreciate our friendship and our relationship. At this point, look, you know, it's June is a million years away. I'm not paying attention to politics yet. We aren't even in the new year. I don't anticipate I'll be making any kind of endorsement anytime soon, but certainly don't foreclose the possibility either. It's just not something I'm really thinking about at this moment.
Understood. We are speaking with Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat. Now, Senator Skoufis, of those vetoed 7 bills, and I get your point, she's approved many more than she's vetoed, but of those 7 bills, is there one that rises to the top for you that you wished had, over all the others, been passed?
Yeah, there was one that I was particularly disappointed about, which was a bill that would have reimbursed pharmacists for work that they do around contraception access when they've got a patient that walks through their doors and the patient's looking to consult with them about particular prescriptions or you know, other methods of birth control. And look, you know, the veto came as a bit of a surprise. And I will say, though, that the governor's office and I, we are working through the veto message and seeing if we can tweak one or two pieces of the bill, get it back teed up, get it in a good place, and get it signed early in session next year. So those conversations are ongoing. But of that tranche of vetoes, you know, that one caught me a bit sort of surprised and disappointed. But look, you know, every year, and this is again, you know, I understand there's a lot of media attention and interest in what transpired a month and a half, 2 months ago, whenever it was, with these vetoes. Every year, I have bills that are vetoed. Cuomo vetoed my bills every year, and Governor Hochul,
sure,
you know, every year, you know, even her best friends in the legislature, she vetoes their bills occasionally. And so we're trying to work through this one. She has a long history of being pro-choice as a lawmaker and now as governor. And so I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to get to a good place where she can sign a slightly revised version of this bill. But that one was a bit disappointing.
Yeah. Well, Senator Skoufis, one of the big challenges is tied directly into the federal government and the cuts. Not only that, but, you know, you have housing issues. You were a part of public housing when you were younger and know all about food stamps. I mean, the state can't do it alone.
That's right. I believe in New York historically has believed in a strong safety net. And the facts are the facts. Whether you're a Trump supporter or not, the fact is that these federal cuts, especially those that came from the omnibus bill that was signed on July 4th over the summer, our job here in New York, in our state budget and the social safety net in particular, a far more challenging way of life for us to sustain here. We're a huge donor state. We already don't get back what we send to the federal government. And so what we see now is this disproportionate attack on blue states like New York, like Illinois, like California, that makes those donor gaps to the federal government exasperate. and they're taking a scissor and cutting some of that social safety net. And the fact is, you know, we in New York now, heading into next year, are going to be faced with very difficult decisions about our tax policy and raising more money. Do we cut in some other places to try and backfill these cuts to Medicaid, to food stamps? I mean, the federal government forever has funded 100% of food stamps. That is now about to change, and that is an enormous sum of money, and that particular cut's gotten lost amidst the much larger and headline-grabbing Medicaid cuts that have come down. And so yes, you know, it's enormously challenging moving forward due to the cuts the federal government has made and the further cuts that they're proposing. And the really sad and tragic part of this, just from a political standpoint, is that especially in other states, but including here in New York, there's disproportionate harm on Trump voters. Go to Appalachia, go to West Virginia and Kentucky, and talk to the folks who live in these communities that disproportionately live on Medicaid and on SNAP and voted for Donald Trump, were fooled, were tricked into voting for Donald Trump. They are going to be taking it on the chin. Their families are going to be taking it on the chin. And it's really a shame. Now, you shouldn't be crafting policy to help your voters or harm, you know, people who didn't vote for you, but he is actively harming people, whether they realize it or not, and more people are starting to realize it. He's harming his own voters, not even just those in blue communities and blue states, but certainly here in New York, we have a massive budget hole thanks to one person and one person only. And I say that because it shouldn't be one person, but Congress has completely acquiesced any and all self-respect as a co-equal branch of government. The majorities in Congress, when Donald Trump says jump, they say how high. And as someone who believes in institutions, as someone in the state legislature, I have been very forceful about the need to be a co-equal branch of government. It is shocking to me that you have hundreds of members of Congress in the majority party down in Washington, D.C., who I guess don't care about being autonomous and doing their own thing and having any independent thoughts. They literally just do whatever one person tells them to do.
Well, we are out of time. That'll have to be the last word. Our guest is Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from New York's 42nd Senate District. As you heard, he's not really afraid to say what he's thinking. Senator Skoufis, I can't thank you enough for joining us, and we'll get you back again. We appreciate you joining us on the Capitol Connection this week.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, and happy holidays.
You too. Support for the Capitol Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.